What's happening, my debt-free millionaire zealots? This is Zach Edwards for another debt-free millionaire podcast and personal finance course. That's right. We're talking to you about everything finance. It has to do with everything from keeping a budget, your accountability, taxes. I know things that some people don't like to talk about, but it needs to be talked about. And also the most important thing is about investing for your future. We want you to be self-reliant, not having to worry about anybody else to contribute to you because you are self-reliant. That means you don't have other people that you have to worry about if they're going to pay up so that you can actually survive, basically. And so this is why we're going to go into Debt-Free Millionaire, this podcast. This is why we are producing a book on personal finance. Now, this is actually written so that a middle school or high schooler can understand it, but it's also written so that adults can read it. So this is for everyone. We want everyone to be able to be part of this and learn how to, one, be debt-free, two, to become a millionaire, and if possible, become a debt-free millionaire. And we will talk to you about both sides of the issues when it comes to different ways that people, different financial gurus, and I say that with air quotation marks, would tell you to do it, or by doing it by hard knocks, the way that a normal person would do it. Myself, I am a normal person. I didn't come from millions of dollars. I also don't pull the wool over your eyes by showing off large airplanes that I bought or I rented or cars that look so amazing or women or things like that. No. I'm a down-to-earth, normal person that's been through all these experiences. And through this podcast, I will actually share lifetime experiences so you can actually understand where we're coming from and how I can actually say you can become a millionaire. You can also become debt-free. And you can become a debt-free millionaire, which are, again, three different things. So if you're going to live to be just debt-free, great. If you want to be a millionaire, great. If you want to be a debt-free millionaire, it solves both issues, and it's so much fun. Okay, sorry, I got something. A piece of hair flying around the room. Okay, so here is what I want to do today. We are going to be talking about, drumroll, thank you. Okay, we are going to be talking about paychecks. Yes, this is your paycheck. Now, for those that don't know what a paycheck is, it's basically every time you get paid, you get a check. Now, this could be deposited straight into your bank account. It could be sent to you in a check. But what you want to do is you always want to check out your pay stub. The pay stub is what should be attached to your pay, your paycheck. And the reason why I say you should see that is you need to see where all your money's going. You need to make sure that they're taking out the right amount of money for your taxes, the right amount of money for your benefits, and also your retirement. Now, if you don't plan for those things, if you're just saying, hey, they're supposed to give me $1,000 a month, I'm going to get $1,000 a month, you're getting the wool pull over your eyes because that's not exactly how it goes. So when you get your paycheck, you will actually have all of your benefits, the money for your benefits taken out. You'll have all your taxes taken out. Everything's withdrawn beforehand because they don't trust that you're going to pay it afterwards. And with good reason, because there's a lot of people that would not pay it. Not saying you, but the average person would not pay it if they waited till afterwards. But just think about it. If you were actually given your paycheck and say it's $1,000, maybe $3,000, would you spend the whole thing of it? Most people would actually spend most of it, if not all of it. And if they were to spend that all, when the taxes came due, they wouldn't have the money to do it. Also, the politicians don't want you to see how much is actually being taken out. Most people don't look at their pay stubs and how much money is being taken out every month. You have no obligation to pay more taxes than they're due. I will state that again, and this is completely legally sound. You have no obligation to pay more taxes than is obligated through law. So if somebody says, oh, you need to pay up this amount of taxes, well, if you can do your taxes and actually get out of half of those taxes, then you're obligated to pay only half your taxes. Now, the taxes that are worth, not the taxes of how much someone told you it was supposed to be. Because you're supposed to be ahead of everything. You are in control of your taxes. You're in control of your paycheck as much as you can. Now, when you want to negotiate your paycheck, say it's your first interview with a person, a lot of times they'll actually ask you, how much do you expect to be paid? Someone will say that. Well, First rule of negotiation is don't mention money. And you could say, okay, how much is someone in this position normally getting in the company? You can't actually ask that. Does not mean they'll answer that. They might just come back with the exact same question they asked you. But you can ask that. And if they're going to be honest with you, they're going to be honest with you. They're actually under obligation with their company not to tell you how much other people are making. But you can ask for the average. You can ask for the normal person starting out. These are all things that you can ask, and they're obligated to tell you enough that it entices you to come work for them. They're obligated by their company, but they're also obligated to the company not to divulge too much information, which is why you might not get that information. But you can ask. What you want to do is you want to go outside of that company, and you want to see what the average person is being paid. There are a lot of different websites online that you can go look up and say, how much does the average starting pay, or how much is the average starting pay for an electrician, a journeyman electrician, or an apprentice electrician? And they will actually tell you. And if it's not what your company is willing to pay you, you might want to look around a little bit. If it's something that they're willing to pay you, great. Then you are basically in the right spot. Now, the way that I did it last time, I actually took a hiatus from home construction for 3 years during the last time I worked in construction. And actually, I think it was a little bit more than that. Because I took that hiatus, I was doing other things, real estate, flipping, those type of things. I actually lowballed myself with the idea that I could come back a year later and say, you now know my work. You know I'm a hard worker. You know I know what I'm doing. And I have a great relationship with all the inspectors. I expect this kind of pay now. Now, if you lowball yourself too much, they're not going to go too high. They're not going to be too dramatic. But you can actually negotiate that. Now, when I got in, it was right before a recession. And so they didn't, I wasn't in the place that I felt that I could actually ask them for that, because I was actually just happy to have a job during a recession. So things come up too. So if you lowball yourself, be expected that that might happen. So when you go in to look for a job, if you're going to go into an interview, you want to find out beforehand how much the normal person is being paid. Now, every company has a non-disclosure agreement in their contract that says you cannot divulge how much you're being paid, whether it's to a coworker, whether it's to your boss, well, your boss should know, or whether it's someone outside the company. Like the second day that I was working in my field, actually probably the second week, a guy comes up to me and says, hey, so how much do you get paid? I want to be able to use this money for, or this number for people we're about to hire. And I swear they were plants, just to see how much I would divulge. And I said, well, the average person in this kind of industry makes about $80,000. He's like, okay, what kind of perks did you get? Well, the average person, again, I wasn't divulging anything that I gave. The average person makes or receives a car, a phone, all these different perks, health benefits. So if you're going to be hiring on people, then you're going to want to offer these things. Otherwise, they're going to go to another company and say, hey, you're more well-established and you have this set record of paying your people. This is what I want. And if you like me enough, then please sign me up. So it depends on how you go to negotiate, but your negotiation should be in your interview, not after you've accepted the offer at your certain price, and not before you have your interview, because they don't have no idea how much they're going to pay you, because it depends on your work experience, how good of an interview it goes, and how much of a people person you are. So these are all different things that they're going to expect to talk to you about in your interview. Now, going back to the paycheck, when you get your paycheck, you have asked for a certain amount for a year. So you wanted 80 grand. But that 80 grand is not going to give you every month. It's actually going to be broken down into 12 months. So it's a 12th of that amount that you've negotiated given to you every month. Also know that they're not going to be giving you that amount every month, because they usually pay you. There's two ways of doing it. Once they can pay you every 2 weeks, or they can pay you twice a month. The reason why there's a difference is if I get paid every 2 weeks, then there might be three paychecks in 1 week, because it's every two Fridays. that you receive a paycheck. Or they pay you twice a month, which is usually on the 15th and the 30th. If they pay you on that routine, then expect that on that day you will receive a paycheck from this company at a set rate that you've negotiated. Then expect that your taxes and your benefits are going to be withdrawn, are going to be taken away, and you're going to be able to work within the amount that you are given. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, this is why a paycheck is so important to talk about, is actually this. And actually, I did not bring it up, so I'm going to bring it up right now. It is this. Where is it pops up? There it is. Okay. Whoops. Let's redo this. Okay. So this is a basic good set of understanding of how a paycheck should be divvied out. 50% of it should go to your needs. This is your rent, and it might not be the whole rent. It might be half because you're going to be paid twice in the month. But your rent, your food. Actually, you know what? Let's go to the second image. This. So this is your income. This is your take-home pay. So, and these are the exact same numbers. So your needs is about 50%. Your wants is about 30%. And then 20%, and this is not just from one source. This is like every source and myself. That is your savings. So 20% should always go to your savings. Why? Because at some point you're going to need that. And say that you have your emergency fund built up, that's when you start paying off all your debts. If you pay off all your debts, you have your emergency fund, then that goes into savings, which also can be investments. But you do want to have your emergency fund always there and be putting money into your 401k, especially if your company's matching your 401k and your retirement's taken care of. And then the rest, that 20%, goes into your savings. There's a reason for this, but we're going to get to that in just a minute. Now, say you're working a 9-to-5 job. That's your take-home pay right there. Let's say it's $32,000. This is after tax, they're saying. Okay, then you have a freelance job where you're making about $500 a month. That's great. Freelance money, you do actually have to put in your taxes, but you don't have to pay your taxes until the very end of the year. So any small amounts that you get from your freelance work, go straight into your pocket. And then as you go, now remember, if you have a business and you have a freelance company or freelance work, if you don't separate that money, meaning that your freelance is your business, if you don't separate that from your personal, if someone comes after you and sues you for your freelance, they can actually sue you for your personal. You want to make a wall. You want to make it so that you have your company money and your personal money. That creates that wall where if they sue you, they can only sue you for what your company has. And so pay yourself a paycheck from there. The other reason why to do that is because money can roll over from year to year from your freelance work. The money that you pay yourself from that freelance job then gets taxed. So if you're going to be paying for tools and things like that, pay it from your company account and pay yourself $100, $200, but make sure that there's a paper trail. As in, if you're going to pay yourself a salary, write yourself up a contract and send yourself a check every month. This creates that paywall between your personal and your business. You always want to have that. Now, what about if you're having investment income? I told you about our rental property. We have a duplex, one of them. Our duplex is giving us, about $700 every month that we could put towards our income, but we're not. We're actually keeping it in our company. We actually created a company off of our rental properties so that if someone sues, they can only sue for that amount of money that's in that pot or the house. And we walk away free and clear. We have what we have, but we're not doing anything unethical. So if somebody sued us and we had to go and our company had to go bankrupt, again, like I was saying a little while ago, actually, I think it was on Wednesday when I was in the airport, I was saying people that plan to, if they go bankrupt, to just give up their company and walk away with tons of money on their own and had no expectation of paying up back their debt, those are unethical people. You are going to be ethical. And so when you get to this point, you'll have investment properties. They'll be creating an income, which will go into a savings account for that company. Then you're going to pay yourself a certain amount every month or every year. You don't actually have to pay yourself either. You can continue to accumulate money. So all of our money, none of it goes to us. We get nothing because it all goes back to our emergency fund. When our emergency fund is full, then we have something else we're going to be doing with that money, including putting that money towards buying the next house. So we're continuing to build up on this house. It is smart to actually pay yourself something so you can see a residual coming off your hard work. So if you want to pay yourself off that investment property, that's why you have $100 here in your monthly budget. Your income, you got an extra $100 from the amount that you're paying from that company because you have $700 coming in every month. And some of that's going to the emergency fund and some of it's going towards paying you. And then Aunt Sally. Okay, so Aunt Sally paid me 10 bucks. I don't count that. I mean, that I would probably put it in savings personally. Or go on a date with your wife or your significant other. Go on a date. Have fun with that $10. Hopefully it's a little bit more because $10 doesn't get you anything. And right now it gets you a single sandwich at a McDonald's. Yeah, that's how sad it is. With inflation that's happened over the last 4 years, McDonald's, actually last 3 years. So if you have extra money coming in, I wouldn't even put it as part of your budget. Make that fun money. That's something you can invest in crypto if you want to, or going out to eat. That takes away less money out of these wants, which is your 30%. But again, I say put it into savings or investments, and that would increase this, which is great. I mean, the more here, the more you have in the future. So definitely a great thing to do. Okay, so let's go through some of these expenses. We've gone over these multiple times, but we're going to go over them one more time. Here we go. So we have the needs. Your rent, that's a need. That's a fixed, we've talked about this, fixed expense. Something that has to be paid every month, and it's the same amount every month. You're paying $1,000 every month from that. The car, okay. So if you have a car payment, which I hope you don't need a car payment, there's $400. That's a good sized car. That's a nice car. You don't need to pay a $400 a month. But you know what? This person does. So there you go. They pay $400 a month towards that car. Ouch. That's a lot of money. Okay. Then your utilities, $150 towards your utilities. Oh, that's my gas bill. Inflation has gone up. This is actually probably old. That's my gas bill. So my gas bill is saying, hey, I want $150 from you per month on the winter months, because that's when we use the gas the most. We do use it other times, such as the hot water heater. And that takes care of our showers. So we'll always have a gas bill, but during the winter, it's $150. During the summer, it's actually the electric that's $150. So you're paying about $400. The amount that they're paying for the car, you're actually paying towards your utilities. If you're in a rental, like a small apartment, yeah, you'd be paying about $150. That's something to look at. Internet and phone. Hopefully, you're not getting this big expensive plan or leasing a phone. We're actually going to show you later on, maybe in a bonus episode, of how to get phones for cheap. And these are nice phones. And this is like a third, if not like a fifth or sixth of what the actual cost is for that phone. We're going to show you the secrets on that. Okay, then your gas, if you're going to spend money to drive to work. Again, the car payment, the gas payment, those go away if you get public transportation. And you're paying like $40 a month instead of $500 a month. And that's until you have the money to reasonably pay for your car, if you have a car payment, or your gas. And instead of taking that $400, if you put that in for 1 year, if you put in $400 a month into a savings account for a car, you'd have $4,800. You can buy a nice used car for that amount. If you save for 2 years, you could take public transportation for 2 years, put that $400 in there, you now have $9,600 to put towards a used car. That's a great used car. So think of it that way. Next thing, $300 for groceries. If you're single, yeah, $300 is fine. If you're married, $400 to $500 a month. And again, these are needs. Personal care, okay, that's where I'd usually lump that into there. If you're single, you can pay the groceries $300. That includes your personal care, depending on you. But non-name brand stuff, even if it's hair gel and other things, that's basically what happens. Okay, what are your wants? Eating out, that's a want. $200, holy cow. That's a lot of eating out. Actually, these days, it's probably not that much eating out. But don't spend $200. Go buy that in groceries for a month. That's like a month's worth of groceries. Look at that. Groceries, $300. Eating out, $200. That's your groceries for every day. That's like going out four times, maybe five times. Please, please go get groceries instead of eating out. Entertainment. $200 for entertainment? What are you buying? Okay, if you're going to the movies twice a month, that's $30 plus maybe popcorn, that's $50. If you're going to the movie theater four times, wow, okay. And bringing some each time. That there you go. You can go to the movie theater four times in a month and pay your $200. Maybe once a month. Maybe you don't buy popcorn. Just saying. Your choice. Okay. Cable TV. No one pays for cable TV. Change that to streaming. Everybody pays for streaming. Golly. But you're paying $14 a month, usually, for streaming. Okay. So that you're paying for two streaming services there. Most people are paying for Spotify, Netflix, Disney Plus, Amazon. Go on. I mean, it's just on and on and on. One streaming service. That's all you can watch. You can't watch two different streaming services at the same time. Buy one, cancel it, start up another one the next month. That way you only have one streaming service and that $30 becomes $10 or $14, like we were saying. But if you're getting Spotify and you're getting Netflix and you're getting Amazon, if you're getting Max and you're getting all these different streaming services, you're paying a lot more than $30 a month. So, and the more you pay here, I mean, these are needed. You have to pay those every month. These are needed. If you're still paying that, your savings goes down. And you pay less and less and less and less to savings and less and less and less and less to debt, paying off your debt. And you will never get out of the debt rat race. Yeah, that's what they call it, the rat race. Because you're you know, the hamster wheel? Think of it as so a hamster wheel, you never go anywhere. Rat race, you're going to be going there around this little maze and you're not going anywhere. There is no exit. They don't want the rat to exit because why? It's a rat. You don't want to loosen the house. Anyways, so the more you can eliminate up here, the more you can put towards savings. The more you can put towards savings or paying off debt, the faster you can pay off your debt. The faster you pay off your debt, the more money you put in savings. The more money you put in savings, the more money you can put in investments. The more money you put in investments earlier, the more you're going to become a millionaire faster. And you're going to be debt-free because you already paid off your debts. That's how you become a debt-free millionaire. So if you want to be debt-free, great. Put your make your emergency fund and then put the rest of that into paying off your debt. Take away a lot of these wants and put that into paying off debt. That'll get you debt-free fairly quickly. If you want to be a millionaire, do both those things. Pay off your debt and start putting money towards investing. Now, like I was saying, you can put things into certain pots. If you want to get a car, don't just go out and spend your savings on a car. Go out and find a pass for public transportation. Drive public transportation for a year, 2 years. Save up the $400 you would be paying on your student loan, and all of a sudden you get a nice car for waiting 2 years. Now say you don't want to wait 2 years. Great. Buy a car in 1 year and pay $4,800 on it. You can still get a used car, a nice one, for $4,800. Just make sure you bring it to a mechanic, either one. Bring it to a mechanic and have them do a test on it. You want them to test everything, look at everything, and make sure that the car is ready to buy and is not going to clunk out a month in or 2 months in or even a year in. I have a Honda Pilot I bought in 2014. That was 10 years ago. It is still running. We took it from about 120,000 miles to 280, I think it's about now. My daughter just gave me the numbers. The reason why my daughter's driving it is because I have a nice car. It was a used car. I picked it up. It was a minivan. And I actually had a truck for work. And we left that job. And I'm not driving a minivan. But just because my daughter is driving the older car. And it's still doing great. and I'm driving the minivan because my wife has an SUV that I call Putt-Putt. I don't like Putt-Putt. It's a fine Nissan Rogue, but I don't really like, doesn't have that much oomph to it. And I would rather have something nice. So this van we got for very, very inexpensive. We actually bought it from a family member who's selling their car. So we got a great deal. And I'm driving the minivan while I'm saving money to buy myself a nice car. And we will get there when we get there. And I'm okay driving a minivan. Before that, I was driving a big truck. Before that, I was driving my Honda Pilot. And before with that Honda Pilot, for my company, I was driving a Prius. Here's a funny story. So my ex-wife was going to the university, and she was going through class. And somehow, I don't know how, I think they were talking about demographics and talking about different people. And they got in the conversation about something that was quite funny to me, about their spouses or their partners. They're all women in this class. Their spouses or partners, what they drove. And the instructor said, how many of your boyfriends drive a truck? And some of them put their hands up. How many of you love that your boyfriend drives a truck? Everyone put their hands up, except for my ex-wife. And they looked at her, and what does your husband drive? Well, he drives a Prius. And everyone's, I think before that point, the instructor said, how many of you would date a guy that drove a Prius? And none of their hands went up. And so, and this is actually when we were going through a divorce. So my ex-wife, I don't think she put her hand up either. And then they said, what do you drive? What does he drive? And he says, he drives a Prius. Oh, yeah, I think there's conversations in that class at that point. But I drove a Prius because I got 40 miles to the gallon. If I got a truck, it'd be 17, 16. Especially back then, it'd be down to 12 miles per the gallon. I was driving long distances. I was going 500 miles to a convention, and I would drive back that night. So I didn't have to spend money on hotel rooms, minus between convention days. And I drove early in the morning, so I didn't have to get a hotel for the day before. I saved a ton of money. I saved tens of thousands of dollars because, one, I drove a Prius, and two, I drove the morning of the convention and the evening afterwards. So I've got a convention coming up. It's going to be in Tennessee. I'm going to go to the convention, and I'm going to leave here at 3 o'clock in the morning so I can be there, set up, and go to convention. I'll be there for 3 days, and then I drive back. Guess what? I will leave that convention when it closes. It closes at 6 o'clock. I will probably be out in the car by 6:30, and I will drive all night, Tennessee to Kansas City. That's 11 hours. I will be driving from 6:30 to 5:30 the next morning. If I get tired, I will pull over and I will take a nap, and then I'll start driving again. It is hard to do, but I saved myself $150 on a hotel room, $100 on a hotel room. And I'm able to be there with my kids when they get back from my ex-wife's house. So that's a great way of doing it. I'm there for my kids. Every time that they are with us, I'm there with them. Every time that my current wife's kids come, I'm with them. This just allows for me to be able to go to conventions and also spend time with my family. And because my wife has to give up some of the time with me, we're going to go out on a vacation at some point in the future. I'll tell you about that later on. But this is great things that we're able to do because we save money, because we get out of debt, because we're on our way to becoming a millionaire. And so I'm going to help you through all these things. So as I said, this is not just one source. This is CNBC. The link is in the notes. This one is from, interesting enough, Knapp Finance. Okay, so it only shows you part of the image. I just took the most important part. But they even said essentials, 50%, 20% financial goals, paying off debt, savings, such, retirement, investments, and then 30% is flexible, eating out, vacations. So this is why every expert that really knows his stuff is telling you to save like this, because you want to do it. Now, if you can save more, great. Put it towards your financial goals, paying off debt, savings, retirement, investments. But if you can't, that's okay. Okay, Thank you so much for joining me on this Debt-Free Millionaire podcast, and we will catch you next time. Thanks again. Talk to you soon. Bye.